Session number 16712. Albert Sachard, Reel 6.
Mr. Scatchford, Reel 6. We're talking about the floods. You said 3 or 4 feet deep. How did it affect you? How did you get around?
Well, the only way we could get around then, we got these Chinese sampans, the river boats. And they used to hold about six of us. We used to get in. And you had to do your patrols in there, because there was a lot of break-ins, Chinese breaking in, you know, food stores and things like that, and what they sort of try and curb it. And the Japanese at this time and all, they were getting into the international settlement, trying to get out of it what they could. They were in sampans, what a brush or two with them, and got them out, you know, and
do you recall any of these brushes yourself? Did you get involved?
Oh, yes, aye.
Do you recall any of them particularly?
Yes, I remember there was one Japanese sampan. We went down the street, and it wasn't quite a cul-de-sac, but there was only one way out. A way around the left onto a little alleyway, and it led away out onto the main street. And anyway, this a Japanese sampan came up, and they were gesticulating and shouting. And they'd been getting stuff out of somebody's house, and it was but you could see it in the sampan. And we had a corporal on board called Corporal Cuddle, and he was a regimental boxer and all. And anyway, they all had this Japanese sampan. And of course, our rifles were loaded up. And he just told me, like, well, just watch my back. And he halted the sampan, as I said. And of course, the language difficulty came in. But they knew that we wanted them out of it, like, you know. And anyway, this Japanese. He must have been the manager. He had no stripes on or anything like that. And he must have been like the old soldier of them. And he stood up and he's gesticulating towards them. And so Cuddle just went over and gave him a push and sent him on his back in the boat. And they're just up and off and away out of sight. And there was other episodes and all, like, you know, with different blokes, like, in fact, where they were really open fire on them and that. And apart from there was very little to do with the Japs.
Did it affect your accommodation, these floods, your barrack rooms at
all? Oh, yes. Well, what happened was we took to the roofs. There was a lot of flat roofs, and most of us got out the flat roofs and got out the barrack room what we could, and took it up there with us. And we were told that we'd get accommodation within 2 or 3 days at Jardine and Matheson warehouses. So we had to put up for it for about a week on the roofs outside. And the band came out one day. Sergeant Bolam was in charge of the band. And he got some of the lads up onto the roof, and they gave an impromptu concert on the roof to live no spirits up. And well, it was laughable. And anyway, after about 7 days being out like that, the floodwaters hadn't gone down, so the transferred us all down to the go downs, And we were upstairs in it in the go downs because the ground floors were all flooded, but we were upstairs in it and it was quite dry.
What's a go down?
Warehouse. The Chinese call them go downs, but the correct name was a warehouse, yeah. And we're all billeted in there. Rattled away, it was rough like, but it was nothing more than we expected, like. Mostly bully beef and hard tack. Used to get a hot meal once a day, but you just had to get anything you could scrounge from anywhere. Of course, there was no parades or nothing now, so we were happy about that.
It had affected the major part of the city, had it, the flooding?
The whole of Shanghai. Yes, the whole of Shanghai was affected. And this went on for about, the floods are there. About 12 to 14 days anyway, and then the Yangtze dropped, and then the flood waters receded, and then there was a case of all cleaning up over the Shanghai environment section, like, and they were all out, all the waterworks and that had been affected. They got on cleaning up, and there was plenty of volunteers for cleaning up the Chinese, there was millions of them. And that everything was spick and span, electric back on and everything. Over the barracks and everything.
Must have been pretty.
And the man I was telling you about before, we had a man had to go and fix the. He did the electric lights, he's out the signal corps. Corporal Grimshaw. That was a man. And he went in and. He's messing about with his electric light in there, and the walls are all damp and everything. Anyway, one thing led to another. He was working on his own at the time, and he got killed. He got electrocuted. So that was the first casualty. Now, that was the only casualty in all, like, you know, fatal casualty came to us out of the floods. Like.
Did you have a full military funeral for him?
Oh, yes, that was a full military funeral, fire squad, the whole lot. Yes. Whether his body was flown home or not, I don't know about it, anything like that.
It must have been pretty smelly and dirty when the first.
Oh, yes. Oh, when we got back, well, we were just like char women for about 3 or 4 weeks. Everything had to be cleaned back. I mean, all the mud and that on the parade ground and. Where the bike rooms, the water, and the stink, and well, it was months and months before, you know, the effects of the flood wore off, really, before go back to anywhere near normal.
Was your health affected by the climate at all? What was the climate like?
Well, the climate, now, in the summer, we had the tropical kit. Now, then we turned to the khaki kit, and we had no putties then at that time. We didn't use putties because we'd been issued with a new dress that had been established in England. It was flown out, and it was the battle dress blouse, which had no polish buttons on or anything like that, you see. And we were grateful for that. So we got that, and what was that all about? Complete blank.
You're saying that you got a change of uniform, and in the winter.
That's right. Now, as the cool weather came in, if you were on guard duty, what happened was you were issued with this special kit. It consisted of your own army kit on. That's a uniform, your ordinary ammunition boots, as they call them, and your hat and everything, gloves, and then you put your feet into these great big high thigh boots, and they were, well, twice the size of your own boots, so you could get your feet into them. They were laced up and at the side, and all thickly padded. You got them on. Then you got, you took your ordinary hat off, and you got like a Russian hat, fur hat, and that with the flaps on. They were fastened down. And then you got these big gloves on. No, the big gloves, they used to come right away up, and they used to fasten right up at the elbows. Of course, you couldn't dress yourself. When you went out on guard duty, two men dressed you before you went out. And the cold used to be intense, because it used to be about 10, 12 below. And to top it all, you got your, they came and they gave, put this great big overcoat over you, a big massive head overcoat. For all you had a fur hat on, it had a great big hood on, and it used to come on and used to fasten underneath the chin. Well, if you, anybody could just push you over, you couldn't do anything. And your rifle. And used to go out, and used to get marched up. You relieve the other sentry, and the guard duties were always two on and four off. But at that particular time, it was reduced to 1 hour on and 6 hours off. Consequently, the guard, the number on guard was increased to cover that eventuality, you see. And used to do 1 hour there. And then the corporal would come up and with the other sentry and relieve you. And then when you got back again, well, it took you another 1/2 hour to get all the gear off, because it was frozen, you know, almost solid. And then when you got thawed out and that, you got a hot cup of cocoa and a drop of rum. And then the next 3 hours was your own while you were on guard. So we should try and get down to it. But if all officer came, well, you had to get up and well, you were almost ready to go straight out, you know. But we didn't used to go outside, parade outside. We used to parade just on the veranda, so we weren't out in the actual cold. Because if we'd have to parade outside, we'd have to get all dressed up again and everything, with these big coats on.
Could you have used your weapon with all this?
There was no way we could have used the weapon. No way. In fact, we all remarked on that. As I said, anybody could come and just give you a good push. Well, the weight of clothes and that you had on you couldn't do a thing about it. You're unbalanced from all sides. Oh, terrific.
You said that at one point you moved to headquarters and the medical room.
Uh-huh.
When you were in Shanghai.
Uh-huh.
About what time would this be? In
well, I'd been in China about a year. And I'd been with this Sergeant McNally, and he showed me around the medical room and everything, like, you know, and he got me interested in looking at the blokes when they come in at night time, you know, after they'd been out on the town, to relieve him, you know, for an hour or two. And he said, well, he said, would you like to have your own? He said, because there's a vacancy with brigade headquarters. He says, they want a medical orderly up there. And when Major Johnson, he was up there at that time, he was at headquarters, brigade headquarters. So I said, I'll give it a go, like. So anyway, he put my name forward, I accepted now. I was moved up to the headquarters. Brigade headquarters, right, was great up there. Because I had a great big swimming pool there, and I was in charge of that as well. And I had to make sure the water was right, you know, putting what they call it, the fluid in that, you know, making sure it's right. And I had about three Chinese looking after it, And they used to look after the medical room, clean it all out and everything. And the medical officer was Captain Barclay. That was his name. He was there. And he used to come in every morning while there was very little sick parade.
I was going to ask you what kind of health problems were in the battalion.
There was very little. Because nearly all precautions had been taken, you know, against mosquito bites and things like that. Of course, you couldn't avoid it, like when you're going out at night. But at night time, it was a must for you, a mosquito net to be loosened and fastened right away around your bed. That was a must.
Did you take any medication for malaria?
Yes. We had once a week. It was quinine prepared. Everybody used to get a spoonful of quinine. It offset the effects of any malaria from mosquitoes, anything like that. It was horrible stuff, and all.
And you were saying that it was very effective, though. It didn't.
Oh yes, there was very little.
So, as a medical orderly, you said you had the swimming pool as part of your responsibilities,
yeah.
And of course looking after the medical room. Did you give out medication supervised by the doctor or anything like
yes, that? Yes, I had to do all that. Yes, he used to. Major Johnson, for instance, he used to come in, and he always used to suffer from heartburn. Well, bicarbonate of soda was his must. And there was something else I was giving him. What do they call that powder? Just a white powder. I forget what he used to call it now and again now. He used to get that and all for his trouble.
If someone came in with a complaint, one would say flu or cold or what like that, what was the medication?
What happened then? If anybody was sick, of course they would have to attend sick parade. They couldn't come to me direct and on the side. They would have to go on sick parade first.
What time would that be?
That was 8 o'clock in the morning. The doctor would be in at 9 o'clock. Whoever had the complaint came in, marched in before him, stated what was wrong with him. Medication was written out by the doctor, and just left on the pad for me. And he used to tell me exactly what to put out, who to give it to, how much the dose was, repeating that, all that. And, I knew it all by heart, like a floor to finish. He never used to bother writing. Anybody coming with flu, I knew exactly what to give him, everything.
There wasn't a universal tablet which covered a great deal of...
The only universal tablet there was what was known as the number 9. Yes, that was for constipation.
And what was it? Did you ever find out what was in it? Or?
Not exactly, but it was very important. If you were constipated, it would shift you within a couple of hours. It's a big case, I used to give them 2. And make sure that they took it while I was standing there. Not to be given to them and take it down to the barrack room and take it. I had to take it there and then. To make sure that they'd got it.
Was constipation a bit of a problem with a lot of
it
people?
It was. Quite a few. Yes. Well, there was quite a few got number 9, what they call number 9s.
So, sick parade was 8 o'clock, as you say.
Yeah.
And was there another sick parade later in the day, or was it just that time every day?
There was only one sick parade per day, on the morning. So, if you took about on the afternoon, if it was a severe case, of course, call Captain Barclay out immediately, the medical officer. He would go down and see to it. And if there was any medication to be given, well, he used to do it himself.
How long were you with the medical room?
No, I was only up there about 9 months, I think. 9 months, and then things start getting naughty with the Japs and that, like, you know, and then when brigade headquarters, they all sort of split up, and I was returned to duty, because back to B Company, and, well, most of the fellas that were at brigade headquarters, they were returned to duty as well, because they must have known there was going to be a move, you know, out of the area altogether.
Do you recall the name of the brigadier who was in command?
I'm forgetting what to call him again now. I couldn't tell you.
Had there been any changes with your own battalion commander? You've mentioned...
Oh, yes.
Ardern. Had there been any
Yes. Well, Ardern was a company commander. But battalion commander, it was Lyside Griffiths. A fellow called Lyside Griffiths.
What was he like?
He's a... Well, he was a man that... liked the battalion to take part in sports. He's a sportsman himself, and that was his speciality, having sports on nearly all the time. Tennis, cricket, football, you mentioned it. He would have the battalion partaking in it.
Did you partake in any particular
sport? Oh, yes, I like to play cricket. I used to play cricket for them. Because John Kirby, he was a cricketer. And there was me and a lad called Smith. And won two or three games for them, like against the engineers.
It's the battalion team.
The battalion, yeah.
From Peking, you said that the Japanese started to act up. But where did you go then? What happened to you then?
Oh, well, we moved out of Shanghai. And went up to Peking, Forbidden City, what they call it. And so many went to Tinsin, and so many went up to Peking, as I say. A company went up to Peking, and the remainder of us remained in Tinsin, the barracks there. And, well, life there was just the same as... Blacked out almost. Plenty of parades and drills, guards and that, you know.
Was the accommodation good there at Tinsin?
Oh, the accommodation was good. You had big roaring fires in the middle of the barrack room. And the stove, it was on 24 hours a day. Chinese used to look after that. Used to keep the big stove going all the time. Because you couldn't do any drills or anything outside on account of the weather. Freezing cold, so you get out about 12 to about 20 below nearly at times. Really bad.
Were the Japanese close to you in that town as well?
No. They were on the outskirts, really, where we were. We had no contact with them at all, hardly. But we got daily news of the activities, what it was happening down Shanghai now, where they mastered the settlement and took everything over,
How long were you in Tinsin?
We're about 6 months altogether, I think. And then we went to went up to Peking. We're about three months up there, and I think they got the word out. The word around, January's going to be not even get the battalion out, sort of stuff.
What were you doing in Peking?
General duties, because we had a British embassy up there, and we're on guard on there 24 hours a day. And the French were there, Americans, Italians, whoever had a foreign embassy, they had their own guards there.
There must have been a very high standard of...
Embassy
guard.
Oh, yes, there was. You had to be turned out immaculate on that. Yeah. Yes.
Did you see the ambassador at all? Were there any high-ranking people that came to watch you?
You saw them out the corner of your eyes, sort of style, when they came out. I mean, you couldn't move your head out, And they're just quite pleasant, I liked it. Peking.
And the Japanese, again, were not too close.
No, there were no. They weren't bothering us at all. We saw them, like, plenty of them, like, you know, from a distance, like.
Being an embassy guard, were there not more ceremonial parades or guards to do because of
No, visitors? Just the only guard what we'd been used to. We just used to march up, relieve the old guard, the way we've always done. No, it was just a replica of what happened before.
So after 3 months there, where did you go?
Well, they decided to get the battalion out. Of course, diplomatic channels, I mean, they knew more than what we did. And we went to a place called Shayang Kei Kuang. That was it, right on the coast. And there was a bit of a wharf out to sea, and we got on this boat, and the whole battalion, and at night time, and we sailed away from there, and we arrived in Hong Kong about 3 days later from there.
Had the European war started at this time?
The European war was imminent. There was Hitler was on the go there on the ramparts and everything, like, and well, we moved. It was just prior to Chamberlain making his speech, I think.
Were you getting any intimation that war was, you know, coming?
Oh, we knew. Our officers would tell us, like, you know, different things, like what was happening, because they had more access to the news than what we had. And
so you knew what was happening in Europe.
We knew what was happening in Europe. And anyway, we got into Hong Kong. And then we started basic training over on the island of Kowloon. And trench warfare and all that stuff, you know. And
you would get back to basic duty, well, basic training in the sense. Digging trenches, you say?
There was no camp duties or guards or anything like that. All ceremonial paraphernalia had all been dumped. Because the staff train is in the actual war manoeuvres, you know, on the hills of Kowloon.
But it was still First World War orientated, was it?
Almost, yes. But we also got the use of, because I was transferred to the Pioneer Platoon then, and been in the Pioneer Platoon. Well, you had to deal in with mines. That's putting mines right and unloading them. And same with grenades. You had to plan the grenades and everything like that. And then we got a course of the engineers on the use of Semtex. That was the plastic explosive. And then booby traps and things like that. Went on a course of that, like, coming handy later on, aren't they?
So the Pioneer Platoon was made up of specialists or skilled men?
Yes. Well, that, you see, the Pioneer Platoon in peacetime, it was you had somebody who could do the plumbing, somebody who could do the joinery, somebody who could do the regimental crests, painting and things like that, you see. And, well, I went in, I was on plumbing. I was in with this other lad, a lad called Taffy Jones. And my name used to do the plumbing, like it. Got known in changing washers and things like that, you know, backroom taps and all that sort of carry on.
How many men would be in a Pioneer Platoon?
There was nine of us, about nine of us. Then you had a lance corporal, a full corporal, a sergeant, and a pioneer sergeant major.
Remember the names of any of them?
Yes, there was sergeant major was named Stonehouse. Sergeant was Sergeant Hogg. Corporal was Ruffy Hill, and Sergeant Henry also, he was in there too with us. Sergeant Henry, Bog Sutherland.
So your duties in the Pioneer Platoon basically changed as war was coming imminent and you went on to more warlike training.
That's right. You forgot all about your plumbing and all that business. All regimental duties was finished. You were put on a war footing then.